What is going on, comic fam? It's your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I am joined by comic creator Patrick Horvath. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you very much for having me on.
I'm so excited to have you on. You're new in the comic game to me.
Yeah.
I was first familiar with your stuff with you did an issue in Haha,
yep.
The art, which is fantastic. But
thanks.
I really got exposed to you, which I think a lot of people did, with your new series from IDW, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. So good.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. It's been I mean, there's been a lot of support, and
yeah,
a ton of it has been unexpected as far as I was concerned, because I am pretty relatively unknown. And so yeah, this is my first creator-owned deal, and with a publisher. And it's yeah, I mean, it's I couldn't ask for more. Like, it's just, the response has been incredible.
Yeah. Well, and rightfully so. So real quick, before we hop into your book, I want to kind of get to know, have you always liked comics, or is this a newer form of media for you that you've gotten into, or did you grow up with comics?
Sure. So like, I mean, I definitely grew up with comics. Let's see. I mean, it's funny because like when I was like 5 or so, I would make these little books that were almost like one page panel.
Okay.
Sequentials of like, and it would be like, one was like tea party at the monster's house, and it was just like all the different monsters were getting together for a tea party. Frankenstein was involved and Dracula, and then there was also like an electric monster and and different stuff, and then and myself, and then and that was fun. Nothing. We
yeah.
Basically just showed up and had fun. That was the point of that one. And then I did another one. It was like me and my buddy and like Flash and Superman at the park. And that was fun. And so like, I was already sort of, I would draw them, and then my mom would type in the whatever, like that. It wouldn't be dialogue, but it would be sort of like, you know, some description or whatever. Or it'd be like my voice, but it would be like saying what was happening. And then, by the time I was in my teens, I got into like buying comics right around the speculator boom in the 90s with Image starting up. That was like prime time, you know, I was like very much entering into my teens when that started. And so I was down at the comic shop getting way into all that stuff. And I had friends that were already coming from DC and Marvel.
Yeah.
And so, and that felt like, I, for whatever reason, that just didn't quite like click with me. And so I was more into like a lot of the Image and Dark Horse stuff. And then I fell out of it probably by like, you know, my end of high school. And so, and then it was just like a big blank spot until after college. And then I got back into it by way of a lot of my friends getting me into, you know, a lot of the artists that are outside the beaten path, like Charles Burns or Daniel Klaus and stuff like that. And so,
and
so, yeah, so like, it, so all the fun stuff, like I didn't, I don't even know if I really knew about it, but as soon as my friends, or even like all the like DC Vertigo stuff that just wasn't on my radar and things like that. And so, and I read a lot of the classics and I read a lot of strange stuff. And then I was at that point that I was like, this is obviously like an interesting avenue. I also had made like other like more traditional looking sort of zine comics in high school just for fun. And they were like weird little zine things we'd make. And so it was, that was like sort of the background. And I love drawing. Like I said, I've been drawing since at least like 3 or 5 or something like that. I love monsters. I love stuff, you know, just strange sort of weird stuff, not necessarily superheroes per se, but just everything. And so then, I had this big drive for filmmaking as well. And so like around college, I went into college with the film as a focus. And then I didn't do any art. Like the last art class I took was in high school, in like the late 90s. So it was just like, I would storyboard on stuff, and that was kind of some drawing that I would do. But beyond that, I honestly, it would just maybe doodle or something. And it wasn't until I had done another movie. Like I did 2 movies after moving out to LA that were just independent things that I was writing and directing on. And then, and there's like teeny tiny features, all horror, for various, like I love horror. That was a big thing for me. And a lot of it too was just where it's positioned, but like beyond like horror movie making is just experimental movie making, which is why I really like it. Right.
Okay.
There's no rules. You can kind of do whatever you want in it and it's accepted. Also, you can get away with a low budget and people will forgive you for that, which was another big thing. And then also a lot of like film festivals will take in these independent horror movies, part of their Midnight Fest. And so you just have a, like a, there's a lot of reasons why, but I also do just genuinely love it.
Yeah.
And then, but anyway, after doing a couple of those movies, it takes forever to do movies. Like it does, it takes a long time and it's just a lot of people. And then like years go by and then something comes out. And so it was after the second movie and I was like, man, it's like, you kind of have this post-project depression. And then I was like, I just want to be creative again. Mm-hmm. And so then that's how I started. I was like, I love drawing. So like, I just like around like 2010, I just started drawing again. Mm-hmm. And it's not great. It wasn't great, but I've like doing it. And so then I've just basically been drawing like every day since then, just for something to do. Cause I loved it.
Yeah.
And then I kept feeding that creativity. It was really fun. And then maybe like several years into that, I was like, I should really think about doing like a comic because that would marry a lot of the stuff. I love writing and I love drawing. And so like, what if?
Yeah.
And then I probably around 2016, I was like trying to pitch. I started pitching.
Okay.
On just a couple projects, not a ton. And obviously it didn't really go anywhere. I did a small thing on my own that was like a graphic novella called Free for All. I finished around 2020.
Okay.
And then also in 2014, I did a short for Josh Trujillo. That was about it was part of his Love Machines anthology.
Oh.
And it's a story about a boy in the iron lung.
Oh, that's cool. I just had Josh on the show.
Oh yeah. Ago, Josh is the best. He gave me my first paid gig.
Nice.
So it's all full circle. Yeah. So so that's kind of my comic reading and making background.
Yeah. Oh, and I know you mentioned Free for All, which you have on your website that people can actually go check out, which highly recommend. Like, who doesn't love a chance to read a free comic?
Yeah. It's patrickhorvath.com. It's under the comics page and it's just it's free.
Yeah.
I mean, plans to make up, and it's all just digital, and it was initially just something I wanted to do for my own sake and put it out. I may have plans to try and get that printed up this year.
Nice.
Because I thought it'd be a fun thing to have actually printed. So that's in the TBD on that. It's in the works, hopefully soon. I've been so busy finishing up Beneath the Trees that it's kind of been hard to just find the time to do that, but that's definitely on my radar.
Yeah, and I can imagine it is super busy. So, you know, you talked about your journey with, you know, you started to kind of get into dabbling into comics a little bit more. You did the Free for All. How did you get connected to do the story for Haha?
That was so W. Maxwell Prince reached out to me to do a cover for Ice Cream Man. And when I did that, it was a terrific little, I mean, it was the first thing, that was the first thing I ever showed up on was a cover of Ice Cream Man. And it was, he liked my art and just reached out and was like, well, would you be interested in doing a cover? And I was like, yes, that would be awesome.
Please.
And it was a really sweet, like he gave me pretty much like free rein to do whatever I'd wanted. I gave him some options. He's like, yes, this one's great. I did it. I turned it around. He's like, great. This is excellent. And then it was just like a really sweet process. And then later he reached out, after we'd sort of established like a really, it was almost like just testing the waters, you know?
Yeah.
And then he was like, listen, I've got this anthology I'm putting together. It's about sad clown stories. Would you be interested in drawing all the interiors for one? And I was like, oh my God, yes, please. And he's like, awesome. Okay. Well, if this works out, I definitely have one in mind that I would kind of basically write to your strengths if you're into it. And so he did, and the script was awesome. And then that's kind of how I got the chance to do that, which is really sweet of him.
Yeah.
And then just went the whole process, like start to finish was great. Like I loved it. And I felt like very, you know, it was a nice confidence booster in terms of having something actually published. And it was, the whole situation was great.
Yeah. And so then did that lead into, you know, like you said, you had a lot of confidence of saying like, let me try something out on my own here. And, you know, again, like you had Free for All, but then, you know, getting to work with, you know, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, how did that kind of come about?
It was totally so. I mean, like I mentioned, I pitched around stuff. There's a writer, Ben Cook, who so Ben and I had put together a pitch that we had shopped around, and then and like got favorable responses, but it just wasn't a match because of like sort of similar content that they didn't want to step on toes of and stuff like that. But it was, you know, it, again, like there's you. It's very common. You just pitch and it just doesn't work out. That's just right. That happens. It's going to happen in film and TV all the time. Same with comics. Like it's, you know, that's just the way of things. The cool thing about comics is that you can just turn around and make it if you really want. And film and TV is a little different, but the, right. Following that, I'm trying to figure out the chronology here. Cause basically it was like, we'd been pitching stuff around and didn't get any responses. And then, you know, like years went by, pandemic happened. W. Maxwell Prince reached out about, haha, I did that. And then also in 2015, so rewind a little bit, I did an anthology called Southbound that I wrote and directed a segment for. And then distributors for that, The Orchard, one of the people at The Orchard is Paul Davidson. And then he randomly ended up filling in for a friend who was on sabbatical at IDW, did film and TV development for them, right? And so, and we had put together a pitch for a graphic novel that he was writing, and it unfortunately just didn't work out. I couldn't swing it financially, so it didn't pan out. But bless his heart, he came on, I think, in a more permanent position for a time at IDW, still working in film and TV development.
Yep.
And then Mark Doyle shows up with their new creator push. And so I think Paul showed him my stuff or something on Instagram. And then it was just kind of like, oh, wow. Okay. This is like, I like his art. And then I think also just because I'd also had, you know, several films that I've written and directed on, the writing part of it too was sort of like, well, you know, he can write and he, you know, can draw. And so then I just had a general meeting with Mark, and then he had sort of said that, you know, there's this creator push that they're doing with IDW. And he was, you know, he definitely would be interested in me possibly doing something I would write and draw if I had any ideas. And so I gave him all a big pitch doc with like six ideas on it, and Beneath the Trees is one of them. And they were just immediately like, this one, do that more on this one, please. And I was like, okay. So then that's kind of how it just came about. Total fluke, because again, like I didn't have really any books to go to cons with, so I wouldn't do cons. I didn't know a lot of people. I know some artists just because of Instagram and stuff like that,
right.
But I'm definitely not in writers as well, and some editors. And but it was definitely like, I'm not at the top of mind for a lot of people that are putting together stuff. So it was just like, that was kind of the weird occurrence that had to happen for me to show up, and then for them to be like, well, do you have anything you would like to do? And then we went from there. But yeah, super lucky.
So, well, it obviously, there's a reason that Beneath the Trees stood out to them, because I've heard nothing but overwhelming support for it. You know, at the time we're recording this, only two issues have come out,
right?
And I'm seeing it on best of 2023 lists and stuff.
Yeah,
and like, two issues in, and I'm
totally
like,
yeah, totally floored, man.
Well deserved. So,
oh, I appreciate that.
I wish. I'm excited to hear what some of the other pitches are someday, hopefully coming into comics. But Beneath the Trees, where did this idea come about?
So I had like you know, like I mentioned, around like 2010 or so, I started just drawing every day.
Yeah.
And if you go on my Instagram, it goes back all the way to when I started doing all that, pretty much, maybe around like 2012. And so it, I would just draw, like I literally do a drawing like every morning for something to do. And just like when I was waking up and having coffee and like listening to the news or whatever. Mm. And so it just as a practice. And the one of the doodles I did was like this bear, this anthropomorphic bear walking along with like a bloodied axe over its shoulder, just kind of nonchalantly walking through the woods. And I was, and I had in that short sort of time thought about like, well, it'd be kind of funny if there was like a serial killer that was like an anthropomorphic animal, and it was all very cutesy, but they were like, had this hidden life. And I was like, that'd be really funny. And then also I'd always kind of thought the children's song Teddy Bear's Picnic was really sinister because of that. The chorus part, it's like this, I think it's like the second chorus where they'd sing beneath the trees where nobody sees, they hide and seek as long as they please. Cause that's the way the teddy bears have their picnic. And I was like, that's what do they do beneath the trees where nobody sees? It was just such a funny concept. Cause I'm very much like, I probably because of, you know, I love horror. I'm just like always wondering like what, like the sinister angle is on something. Yeah. And so, it all came together kind of just when I drew it and was looking at it and posted it up. And it was just cause like a lot of the things I like to draw tend to be like these weird moments and some sort of a situation. And a lot of the fun is kind of just figuring like just kind of what happened before and what's going to happen after these little moments. And that's a lot of my writer brain is just constantly like, you know, thinking of that stuff. And so, so that's where it came from. It was just this drawing. And then I ended up, you know, thinking more along the lines of like, well, it'd be funny if it was like a town like Richard Scarry's Busy Town, where everybody kind of had their little spot, you know, their own little job, and everybody kind of clicked together. And it'd be really funny to like upset that somehow. But to have the main character be the serial killer that fit right, like loved the orderliness of it all, you know what I mean? And then figured a way to sort of, you know, thrive in that kind of setting because they're always like a step or two ahead of everybody else because everybody else is so innocent. And so anyway, that was the main idea. And when I pitched it, that was this, I kind of had like an idea where it would go with the beginning, middle, and end. And then when they wanted to read more, I basically just like came up with this huge outline that was all six issues and then, you know, went with it from there. And so it wasn't until probably like 2021, like I really fleshed it all in.
Okay.
But the idea itself, I think it was like 2017 when I drew that or something.
Wow. So is it because you said you posted on your Instagram, is that probably up on your Instagram?
Oh,
somewhere?
It's definitely up there. Yeah. It's funny because like I even had like, there was a small period of time where I was making my own little notebooks and it was one of the images I used for these like little handmade notebooks that I'd make and sell in like a Gumroad shop or whatever. So some people might have the little notebooks. I still have mine. But yeah, it's pretty funny.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. So it's six issues. It's a really cool story. What I love about it is the serious tone in such a, you know, fun setting too. Like it just is such a nice balance. And I'm super impressed whenever I have a creator on who does both the writing and the art aspect, because that is a tough job. Both of them are tough jobs. And then you're just like, you know what? Let's just do both. Why not? Right.
I mean, to be honest, like I'm very comfortable with doing both.
Yeah.
The only thing that's been tough is that there's is just the one person band nature of it doesn't allow for a ton of like, it doesn't allow for you to pay attention to a ton of the other stuff that goes along with pushing out a creator own thing. So like I make time for as many interviews as I can because I value them so much. Like this is so great. And again, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then also there's little things like even doing like back matter. Like I wish I had the time to put together back. I just did not. Like I don't like there's different stuff where I wish that I had more available attention to give to different stuff or, you know, whatever. So that honestly, that's been like the hardest thing is just like, because if it was a writer artist team, ideally like the writer could be stepping up and like doing all this stuff, you know what I mean? While the artist is sort of finishing everything up. And so it's, you know, it's, that's the only thing that I kind of miss on. But I mean, it's beyond that. It's still like, I'm very happy to be writing and drawing and to kind of, you know, look back at like working in film, the fact that there are so few people that do work on comics, I really appreciate that intimacy. So, you know, when we do like on this comic, I'm writing and drawing and I'm working with Maggie Howell and Jake Williams with IDW and my editorial staff. And so like, and I also have Hassan Otman Elhow doing letters, and that's, I mean, that's in terms of creativity, that's it.
Yeah.
And so like that team is like, it's so small, and they're all so great that like, you know, you can't like, I don't know, you just can't get that type of, that like that, that connectedness with working on a movie. So anyway,
when you have so many other people that are pitching in,
and I mean, and that collaboration is the name of the game, and it's, and it, you know, and having other people bring stuff to it is part of it as well. And I do value that. And again, working with Hassan's like, I mean, he's one of the best for a reason.
There's not a book that Hassan's not on, it feels like.
Dude, it's hilarious because like I was 100% like, we're never going to get him. And he was on the top of my list, but I was very much expecting that it just wasn't going to happen. And there are other tremendous letterers as well.
Yep.
But I just, you know, he just has this thoughtfulness that I also just see in his appreciation through all of the other, you know, channels that he works in with, like, you know, Panel X Panel or like, you know, Strip Panel Naked, where you're just like, or even his own stuff he's writing now, where it's like, it's obvious that he has this very thoughtful appreciation of the medium, and his work just reflects that so well that it's just undeniable. And it adds so much. And it's something that like, and again, this is part of the collaboration, why it is so great, is like when it's working well, it just adds so much to it. That you're just like, you know, basically like, it's one of those, you know, the sum is greater than right. You know, the effect is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's cool, man.
Oh, for sure. And I'm sure, you know, being newer still into the comic scene, having someone like, you know, Maxwell Prince, when you're, you know, him writing the script to say, hey, here's what, you know, working for your art style, probably helped you then, you know, honing your craft even as a writer for comics even more so, and seeing how they set up stuff. And so,
dude, sure, it's so funny because like, it's at least when you work on movies and TV, there's a million scripts that you can just look at, and they're relatively the same format and whatever. And so anytime it's so funny because as soon as I started getting into comics, I was like, what does that script even look like? You know what I mean? It can literally be whatever,
right,
is the thing. And just to have that was huge. So working with Josh Trujillo and also with Maxwell Prince, like it's all that stuff is huge, especially if you're someone like me who has zero like, you know, experience with any sort of professional framework for this stuff. And again, working with the editors and working with Hassan, it also works to that effect, right? Like having them on your team, and they're super seasoned, and it's just like, how do I want to put it? Like, it frees me up. This is the first time I've ever had editors that I get to work with.
Mm.
And it really freed me up to take bigger swings and let them check you and be like, hey, so this isn't quite landing, I think, the way that we want it to. And they're so dialed into the same sensibilities that I am that it's so helpful.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing like how important that is for me. So it's cool. It's like, yeah, I mean, to be honest, like this whole thing, as I've sort of been talking through this, laying it out, it's just a big, big story of luck as far as I'm concerned. And then kind of learning, you know, a way forward that where you can hopefully, you know, improve, right? But then also, you know, the only bad part of this whole thing so far is just the time it takes to do the work.
Yeah, well, I was curious because, you know, since you started the process, like what, you know, round, I know it's probably different for each, but like, how long does it usually take you with this process for an issue?
So it, okay. So like, and I'm doing it traditionally, so I'm not doing any of this digital.
Okay.
And so the way forward for me, and I do, and I'm mostly doing that because it's faster for me because I'm just so bad at digital, to be frank. Like I'm just not, and to be happy with the result. Right. So it's just more quick for me to do it traditionally because I can lean on the mistakes of the happy mistakes of painting and stuff, right? I'm just a lot happier with that stylistically. But so from start to finish, like I'll do, it takes me like several days to write the script, and then to, you know, go back and forth for edits, maybe like a week, and then, or maybe a week and a half, it depends. And then to start cranking out the pages, like it takes me about 14 hours for a page.
Okay.
And that's like, that's once I have like the layout.
Yeah.
So once I'm, and as I'm writing though, I tend to do these super duper rough layouts on iPad. And then I'll, and that just lets me know for the script itself so that when they're reading it, they can kind of have some of an idea of like what I'm thinking.
Right.
And then I can also tap back into what the hell I was thinking when I wrote it. And so then, and then I'll go through and do basically like tighter layouts on iPad and that are, you know, the right ratio for the page. And then I send those in for them to look at too, as I get started. And then at that point, that's about like, after that, once I get started, then it'll be about like, you know, pencils, inks, paint, and that's about 14 hours for each page. And so it's, so I, like, if I'm lucky, I can do like 3 pages a week or more maybe. But I mean, like the other thing is my wife and I just had a child. And so like, we've got like, you know, that was like, I mean, we had had her probably like, I guess I started around January, about a year ago.
Yeah.
I started. And so like, it's been, it's just been kind of a process getting through all of it. Because of, you know, I mean, at this point, our baby's about 16 months old, and you know, it's easier. Nights are a little easier, and mm-hmm. daytime's a little, schedule's starting to appear a bit. So that's cool. But it was just dicey for a yep, while, you know.
As a dad of two young girls myself, yes. I understand.
Yeah.
100% when people are like, hey, when can you do this interview? I'm like, well...
Oh my God. It's, you know, and I mean, it's a wonderful thing. And I don't, you know, yeah. I'm not upset with any of it. It's just that it's just been hard to find the time to get it all done in a timely fashion or whatever. But, but it's, you know, a lot of mornings and a lot of nights and then figuring everything else out.
Yeah. Well, this, you know, what I love, the story, the art, like you said, you mentioned kind of like it rings kind of like a Richard Scarry of, you know, that book and that vibe of how you created it. And then you're bringing in this element of a serial killer. And, you know, it's intense from the aspect too of like, you know, I've seen people like, oh, it's Dexter meets, you know, Richard Scarry. But like, even on Dexter, like, he's at least doing it to like bad people.
Yeah.
You're just like, no, like, let's just go.
It had to be cold-blooded. I didn't want it to be cool. Was the thing. Yeah. And again, like the Dexter thing was super handy as a pitching element, right, because everybody can latch onto it. But to be totally honest, like I've seen the first episode of Dexter and that's about it. And I knew the idea behind it. Right. Like I knew the concept and I knew that he specifically only murdered bad people. And I felt like that was just way too convenient. And like, I didn't want that to be, here's the thing though. I mean, like you kind of have to have something to root for, but I was approaching it from like, if you could get people invested in a killer sort of to the same degree as like, you know, Norman Bates from Psycho, right, where like after he's murdered this woman trying to hide the body, et cetera, like that was all sort of at the point where like everybody's waiting for the car to sink that he's put the body in the trunk of. And it almost seems like it might not sink. And everybody's like, ooh, I hope it sinks. And you're like, why do you hope it sinks? Like,
right.
You know what I mean? But like to create tension over whether or not it'll get away with it felt so compelling that I was like, I bet you could lean into that. And then the other element that I wanted to really push was the universal sympathies of somebody having their life totally upended. And so if you could have, I mean, the pitch was basically like a serial killer who is very careful, all of a sudden finds himself in a town with another, like with some sociopath who's like totally reckless.
Right.
And you have to figure out who amongst the seemingly cute people it is. And then it's kind of a spy versus spy thing. And then you're, you know, and it's a fun bit of a detective thing. And so all that felt like it would be very fun and compelling enough to watch, where you could still have such a cold-blooded killer who is also like cold-blooded in the way that like nature's cold-blooded, right?
Right.
Like in the sense of like, it has to just be random. And that's just the way that is.
Yeah. Cause that's like, one of the rules is it has totally to be random.
Yeah. Cannot be cute. Can't have like a weird method to the madness. Like the only method is how she does it. She doesn't, in terms of like her, you know, the murdering and dismembering or whatever, it's feeding whatever strange compulsion she has. Right. But like beyond like who that it's like, whoever it is has to be random. Right. And it can't be like, it's all very careful. So like, yeah, if I could find someone who had this careful life that they'd set up and been doing for decades, and then just to have the rug pulled out from under, I felt like something even people who just have been living through the pandemic, say, you know, could completely relate to.
How, you know, I didn't even think of it from that angle, but you're right of, you know, we have everything in order. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoops, you can't out. You can't hang out with friends and like everything routine. And it is interesting to see that with the character of, you know, being so meticulous, being so strict to her rules, that this is an outside of her realm. Like it's nothing she can do. And it's like, well, you've got to figure it out.
Yeah. But, and then to also still have, you know, be approaching it from this, you know, this frame of mind where she does feel like she's a step or two ahead of most people in town.
Yep.
And then also like kind of suffers from a bit of hubris of thinking that she's sort of, you know, infallible to a certain degree. So it's, you know, she has definite, you know, vulnerabilities for sure and blind spots. But then also it's just like, you know, very much this insidious thing that's just been hiding in front of everybody. It was as much as if you take out the murder part, she seems like a great person.
You're like,
you know what I mean? Like,
well, and it almost,
I definitely wanted to lean into that.
You almost can look at it that way and go like, you know, like you root for her because she, you know, and then, you know, without giving anything away, you know, in issue two, you introduce a character where you pretty much are like, you know what? We're rooting for the serial killer over Cherry. So, because like, that's a character like, who nobody likes, and you're like, I hope this character gets what's coming.
It was, I very much wanted to do something flagrant like that. And I honestly feel, I mean, like, spoiler alert, I guess if we're going to talk about it, like, if you haven't finished issue two, if you haven't gotten issue two, like, go find it and read it. And then, you know, pause this, go read it, and then come back to now. Okay, so you've read issue two. The thing that I feel like it was funny because I got a note from Hassan after he lettered issue two, talking about how much fun he had with Cherry. And it was fun. It was really fun to write for her.
Yeah.
And I feel like I totally missed, I don't know if I missed an opportunity or just like maybe learned a lesson about what I could do with characters, is that like, I mean, how awesome would it be if she stuck around and we had a redemption arc from this total asshole? And there's something about giving like a total jerk some sort of like, you know, moment of reflection, of like being able to somehow turn around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That like it is also very fun. But it was also, I don't know, it was one of those things where it was like, it would just be so funny to have such a flagrant person be the thing, and then to have like whoever this mysterious killer is, like have them just obviously like this huge walking target just going around town. And like the obvious, like not unwanted, you know, connections that she has with Sam and stuff. Like, anyway, it was definitely fun. I had a lot of fun writing Cherry.
Well, yeah. And like I said, I haven't seen anything past issue two, and you know,
so
for what sets this up is, you know, my thinking is it could even throw even more wrenches in the plans with Sam and, you know, and things that happen. And it, like, it just is a fun, I guess it's weird to say it's a fun ride, like when it's a serial killer book.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know what, the four things that were guiding me through creating it were, I wanted it to be fun. I wanted it to be cute. I wanted it to be, like very upsetting, and I wanted it to be dark.
Mm.
And so like, those were kind of like I wanted the violence to be upsetting. I wanted it to be like very grounded and dark when it needed to be, but I also wanted it to be very fun and cute when it needed to be. And it's all those things that those are the four main pillars of the whole, like, as I'm writing it. And if it's any too much of one of those things, like, I'll definitely like back it off and make sure that you know, we have enough so that the ingredients aren't overpowering one another.
Well, but, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, so to your point, I mean, like, I hope it's fun to read, but at the same time, like, it should also be like, it's definitely not like a celebration of violence or anything like that. Like, it's definitely not, you know, I mean, I don't feel like I'm celebrating the violence as I make it. Like, I feel bad when it's happening to the people. And so, like, it's, it's going to get worse. Like, it's going to get way worse, like, as the issues go along. So, like,
I mean, I'm sitting here going, good, I hope it gets worse. Like, I feel horrible. I'm like, yeah, man, I hope it gets worse for these people. But there's a reason that serial killer documentaries are popular.
It's so compelling. And I feel like a lot of that has to do with also just you putting yourself in those positions and being like, how would I react in those moments? Would I see that this was a killer trying to get me to do something? Like the first kill that happens in issue one is very, I mean, it's very similar to like the John Wayne Gacy. Wait, is John Wayne? No, sorry. It was the, he was the really handsome dude. Who was the handsome guy that would pretend his arm was broken? And he's like, I just need help getting the. What is it? Who is that? You know what I'm talking about? I don't know, like Bundy. Ted Bundy.
I was like, so, it's not Dahmer. Yeah, yeah, like,
yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I was having a very,
yes, Bundy
COVID brain moment. So anyway, so when Ted Bundy would pretend, I mean, he's had like a $1 million smile and like nobody would even suspect him. And so it was totally cribbing from that with her just having the car in distress.
Right.
And I would 100% be the duck that was like, oh, I can help you out. I'm sure I already found out what the problem was. Let me help you fix it. And so it was like, I would very much be that person and fall victim for it myself. So, I mean, I do feel like I did. And I did wrote that in on purpose because it was such a thing that I would do. And I feel like that is part of the thing as like a reader with true crime stuff and whatever is just being like, God, I hope I wouldn't like fall for this, but you know.
But yeah, because it's not like you're, it's not like it's a different type of like when you're watching a horror movie, you're like, don't go in that house.
Sure,
don't
sure,
run.
Sure.
Like it's like you said, you're just trying to be a genuinely nice human.
Yeah,
being.
I know. It's not even like a home invasion thing or anything. It's literally just like the Good Samaritan is the victim.
Like, hey, let's. And
which makes it so worse, which was again like I wanted to make it just like really not cool.
And you, I mean, again, gang, we paused it on issue two, so if you're here already, gang, you've read issue one, because I hope you didn't just go read issue two.
Yeah
But that kill scene that you have, that one whole page of the poor duck,
yeah,
talk about intense.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to devote enough time to it. It's been interesting trying to pace out everything because they're all 22 page issues.
Yeah.
And finding enough space for stuff to breathe was a concern that I didn't know if I'd be able to pull it off. And but I was actually, after the first issue, I felt way more confident in how everything would fit together. And so I definitely did want to give a good solid moment to just the method of it, because I'm a very big proponent of just watching people work. Yeah. Like if anybody's good at a job, like I love just watching people work, either like on a factory line or like a barista or whatever. Like watching somebody do woodworking on a lathe. Like if they know what they're doing and you're watching someone do it, it's so fun for me. So same thing with like, I just thought it'd be really fun to just watch her do this thing that she's very good at and, you know, is obviously like very macabre. And so having that and then also sprinkling in the weird kind of, like the deep, almost the sort of mental perspective that she has of like, when she's like literally canoeing down like the river of blood from the red blood cells and like all that stuff, like very much tapping into this little glimpse into like the weird sort of strange ecstasy that she gets from it.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, I could talk to you for hours about this, and I'm gonna have to have you back on once the series wraps up.
Please do. Yes, I would love to.
And so we'll just have a spoiler filled breakdown of Beneath the Trees.
Yeah,
that'd
be awesome.
Because I really want to. I'm excited to see where this goes. So at the time of recording, issue 1 and 2 are out. You said it's a 6-issue arc.
Yeah.
So where can people, you know, follow along with you and stay up to date with what you're working on?
So, I mean, you can always go to patrickhorvath.com. And that's always, you can reach out to me there through email, and then you can find all my socials on there. And I'm on Instagram at catbirdplanet. And then also on Twitter, like Patrick Horvath, and Blue Sky at Patrick Horvath. And I think if you're on Instagram, you can find me on Threads through there. So
right.
I sort of just went through the whole diaspora, and
I know it's more and more these days as you try and navigate of which one.
Yeah, again, like there's limited time, and you're just like, well, I can't, and I hardly am, you know, I can post anything, but I do keep up on when new issues are coming out and if I'm doing signings, and so on. And like one time, and I'll be done with the whole run very soon. Hoping to be doing a lot more tabling at conventions.
Nice.
Starting up this year. So yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah. And I hate to ask, like, you know, do you have, is this your main, obviously your main focus? Are you working on other stuff? You got other things in the pipeline or?
Oh, I have other, yes, I've got a couple other books that are just totally in development right now.
Cool.
But very excited about. And it's just going to be, there's going to be a little breathing room, and then I'm going to jump into that, and hopefully I'll have something to share about those soon.
Awesome. So again, go follow Patrick on all the socials so you can stay up to date, hear when stuff drops. If you are not reading Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, and you're listening to this interview and you're still here, shame on you, because you're supposed to pause it and go back and read it. But now go read it, because you should be inspired to read it.
So. Sure. Yeah, please.
Well, again, Patrick, thanks so much for taking some time to talk about comics with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. So hopefully you can find some time to curl up, grab a book, and nerd out. Peace.